On October 11th, Feeding Matters invites you to Feed the Cause, the annual signature event to raise funds for education, advocacy, and family support for children with pediatric feeding disorder and ARFID. Held at the beautiful Papago Golf Club in Phoenix, Arizona, enjoy an evening of gourmet chef tastings, mixologist creations, live music, a silent auction, family stories, and more. To purchase your ticket, or become a sponsor, or purchase a ticket for a caregiver, visit feedingmatters.org/feed-the-cause. That's feedingmatters.org/feed-the-cause.
Presented by Feeding Matters, with hosts Jacqueline Peterson and Dr. Haley Estrom.
Feeding Does Matter.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Feeding Does Matter. My name is Jacqueline Peterson. I am solo with our guest today, who is chair of Feeding Matters' upcoming fundraiser in Arizona. And while it's an event in Arizona, we are welcoming our community from across the country to Feed the Cause, which is happening on October 11th at Papago Golf Club. So my guest today is our event chair, Dr. Lisa Beanstock, and we are just so thrilled to have her on. She is a board-certified pediatric dentist, vice president of the Arizona State Board of Dental Examiners, and associate director of NYU Langone's Pediatric Dentistry Program in Phoenix. She owns two thriving practices and is really focused on prevention-focused and positive dental care for kids, which is exactly why she's connected with us and a part of this event and what she's going to be talking about today, too, which is how can we make sure that we're having those positive experiences even when feeding isn't going as we are expecting. So beyond the clinic, she's a national speaker, educator, and philanthropist. And at home, she's a mom to three kids, a teen, a grade schooler, and a toddler, who I imagine keep life very, very busy. But I love that she shared that she's got dance parties with Joyful Chaos, because that's so, so important. So Dr. Beanstock, so great to have you. Thank you so much for being event chair of Feed the Cause, but also for your passion for this community and for all you do in partnership with Feeding Matters. Really excited to have you today.
Oh, thanks, Jacqueline. Me too. I'm excited to be here. Please call me Lisa.
Okay.
We're not in the office. Please call me Lisa. I love this organization. I'm honored and grateful to be a part of it. And I love everything that we stand for at Feeding Matters.
Thank you so much. And I feel like you live that day in and day out at your practice. And so let's kind of just get started in terms of your specialty, because we've had lots of different professionals on before, but you are our first in pediatric dentistry. So would love for you to kind of give an overview for everybody and even how you got into this specialty in general.
So I love children, and to me, it's about setting up a lifetime of success. And dentistry, my brother's a dentist and he's older, and he was like, you should be a dentist. And I was like, okay. You know, when you're like trying to decide in your early 20s what you're going to do with your life, you just make random decisions. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I got to dental school and I was like, I don't really like this. But when I started treating kids, I was like, wow, this is amazing. This is impactful. I can help set up, you know, success and positive experiences that will make a difference in their lives forever. And then after dental school, I went to residency in pediatric dentistry, and that's when I started treating a lot of medically complex children and special needs kids, and you name it. It all falls under the umbrella of pediatric dentistry. So I, moved back to Arizona after I went to Columbia for my residency, and I practiced in New York City for a while at New York Presbyterian Hospital, and then here I am back home. I was born and raised here in Arizona. And it just turns out that one of my best friends has a son who is G-tube fed. And I remember going to her house when he was probably 4, I want to say. And I brought a toothbrush and we practiced brushing, because anytime he came to the office, he didn't want to be here. And it was, you know, traumatic for him, because anything by mouth was traumatic for him. And so it just took, you know, baby steps, baby steps, baby steps. And I actually brought my older son with me and we practiced on him and he practiced on him brushing. And so and she's a huge member of this organization and she spoke at one of the events a few years ago. And because of her, you know, here I am. Her name's Tara Rakow. And she's the one who introduced me to Feeding Matters. And it just goes to show now her older son comes in the office. It's down. He actually had his G-tube removed last week, which is incredible.
So exciting, Lisa. Like I was just talking to her husband. So her husband Ian's on our board, just for everybody out there that's listening. And yeah, it's just so incredible.
He's made such, you know, huge strides and yeah. He comes to the dentist. We did Invisalign on him. I mean, it's incredible the things that we do now with him that we couldn't do. And it just took time and patience and consistency and energy and, you know, and here we are. And he's an amazing story, right? And it's that's the why. That's why I do what I do. That's why I love being a part of this organization, because there is light at the end of that tunnel and there are great success stories. You just have to hang in there.
Yeah. And it just takes time and adapting to what the circumstance needs in the moment. And I think that's something that you really do for your families, because I know, so we have a lot of families that are very nervous about any sort of like dental, oral hygiene, any of that, just because there's so much trauma that comes with feeding and all feeding disorders and differences. And so maybe talk to us a little bit about how you make a family comfortable even before they kind of get there, or give maybe some tips for families. Cause I think that's the thing we hear a lot is like, I'm just nervous.
Right. A lot of the anxiety comes from us as parents, right? And if we can alleviate our own anxiety and do before you bring your kids to the dentist, do, you know, books and videos and, you know, movies and just talk about it and take pictures, or maybe bring them with you to the dentist so they can see, you know, what's going to happen. Or Tara would film Zev at the dentist, you know, with me, and that would also help. We always do, I love doing happy visits. So even if they just come in and see the office and sit in the chair and push the buttons, and practice on a doll, or we have like a lion with like giant teeth we practice on, and practice brushing, and you just start slow and it's desensitization. And over time, you know, come once a month, come every 3 months, come every 6 months. But as long as you have that consistency, we will make strides. And even though, you know, a lot of these children are G-tube fed, or even if they're not, if they are fed, but it's difficult and the trauma that comes with anything oral. And I understand that the last thing you want is to fight with your child about getting a toothbrush in the mouth, but cavities are the number one childhood disease. It's the most preventable of any of them. So we just want to get that toothbrush in there and make it a positive, happy experience. It doesn't have to be bad, right? We can make it good. We can make it good and fun, right? And kids pick up on our anxiety. So we have to first deal with our own, you know, the way that we exude our attitude and efforts and energy before we introduce our kids to it.
Yeah. And like those steps to prepare, because I think there's just, our families are facing so many different things and trying to figure out like what's a priority and what's not, and what can, like, this appointment can be pushed a little bit because it doesn't feel as important as some of the other things. But when the time does come around to it, taking those steps. And I love the baby steps that you're doing, because that's something that's so used in so many different therapy spaces too, is like, how are we getting comfortable and what are we using to prepare both ourselves and our kids for what that looks like? And it's taking it so slow, I think, is so important.
And a lot of parents don't want to come because they're afraid that their kids are going to freak out, you know, and scream and kick and whatever. But as pediatric dentists, we are used to that.
I was like, are you used to it?
Like, it's not, it's like abnormal if a child isn't doing that sometimes. So it's not like we're going to judge you or think to ourselves, oh my gosh, your child. I mean, that is like the last thing in our heads, right? We're here for you, and we're here to work together as a team collaboration with your interdisciplinary team to get the best results we possibly can, so your child has the best experience.
Yeah. Well, and you make such a great point about collaboration and interdisciplinary team, because I think we talk a lot at Feeding Matters about how there's so many different professionals on your team. And I often feel bad because pediatric dentistry gets a little bit left out of that, but is such a like a key piece of, you know, you're in the mouth. And if you're not getting the things that you need to be getting as you're building up and learning to eat, and even if that process is taking longer or it's an alternative process and a difference in feeding, it still is needs to be in the mix. So how do you kind of either work to advocate for your role on the team, or how do you work in partnership with other professionals that are supporting our families?
Well, I'm all about picking up the phone. I mean, I don't think people do that anymore,
right? No, that's so true.
So I'm all about picking up the phone and calling who is on their team, right? And giving them updates about where we're at and if there's anything that I can do to help in any of the stages of where the kids are. I mean, it's all very it's independent and patient specific, right? So there's not one blanket, one thing fits all for every single child. Are you kidding me? It's so far from that. So, you know, open communication is key, and, you know, talking to their like GI docs, and I mean, talking to all the docs is great. And here, you know, it, because of the NYU Langone Pediatric Dental Residency Program that I run here in Phoenix, we go to Phoenix Children's and we see a lot of kids at Phoenix Children's Hospital, and we're able to have that open communication. But even if they're not at PCH or a patient at PCH, we still get your list of doctors and pick up the phone, you know, and have those conversations.
Oh my gosh, I think that's so wonderful, because I think it is. It's not, we don't pick up the phone as much anymore. And one of the things that we talk about a lot is that like collaboration, and how do you build those relationships? And it is just kind of talking with one another and opening that door for open communication. That seems to be such a huge advantage when there can be time for that. I know space and time and all of that is really short right now, but
that's time for it, right? I mean, to make the time.
Yeah, no, it's supporting families, and that's what it seems like you're so passionate about, which I feel like the families can feel off of you, and why you have such a great community of families with you, and especially ones that like do have what our community has in feeding disorders and differences like PFD and ARFID.
Feeding Matters understands the significant financial difficulty that comes with supporting a loved one with pediatric feeding disorder, or PFD, and avoidant restrictive food intake disorder, or ARFID. Each fall, we open the Family Assistance Program. Since 2019, we've awarded $40,000 to families throughout the United States. Applications for the 2025 cycle are currently being accepted and are due Friday, October 10th. Feeding Matters will award $1,000 grants to 10 families. Learn more and apply today at feedingmatters.org/family-assistance. That's feedingmatters.org/family-assistance.
It's just getting that toothbrush in there, right? I mean, cavities, because they're the most common childhood disease, it's not just caused by sugar, right? It's diet, it's oral hygiene, like how often you're brushing. And then the genetic component that people say, like, oh, it's genetics. It's not. It's the bacteria that's transferred. It's called vertical transmission from parent to child. So if you're a parent who has had a history of cavities and you're sharing with your kid, like, a spoonful for me, spoonful for you, which happens a lot with kids with feeding disorders, because we're trying to demonstrate and show them and model as their parents how we eat and help them through it. And so I feel like there's more sharing with parents that have feeding disorders. And so if you are a parent who has had cavities in the past, you're actually giving your child the bacteria that's virulent, that causes the cavities. And over time, the more they're exposed, the more they're going to acquire that bacteria that causes cavities, which makes them more prone to decay. And so that's why we want to get in there and make sure that we're brushing and make sure that we're checking those areas. Even if they're G2 fed, we still need to check everything in there to make sure that everything's healthy and clean. Because the last thing you want is your child to have a cavity or be in pain and have that interfere with any sort of feeding whatsoever.
That's such a great point and probably something that people don't know a lot about. Because I can see how you would get to that point, especially if we are advocating for like, let's do shared mealtimes, let's do some modeling and some of that. That's a very interesting point, Lisa. Anything else that you think is unique for people to hear as they're thinking about supporting their kids and families? We have a lot of professionals that also listen to this that may not be aware of some of the reasons they can encourage their families to support that oral hygiene.
You know, the earlier you see a pediatric dentist, the better. So it's the kids that come in at age, it used to be the old recommendations were that you see a pediatric dentist by age three. By age three, they have, typically they have all of their baby teeth by then, and they've been in the mouth for a little while. And so by age three, some kids already have cavities and we have to address that. So the new recommendations that have been, I want to say new, I'm putting in quotes because it's been like this for, I don't know, probably 15 years minimum, is that you see a child, the recommendations by the American Academy of Pediatrics and Pediatric Dentistry is age one should be the first dental visit or first two. And the reason why is because it's more anticipatory guidance. We talk about ways to get in there and what we should be looking for and what we should be doing. And especially kids with any sort of feeding disorder, it's really important that we meet and that we go over those things to help and to set you up for success for the future. So if you bring your child to the dentist at age one or first tooth, and we're seeing you minimum every 6 months, then there won't be any anxiety or trauma or anything like that, you know, when we actually need to do something or have to do something, because they're so comfortable and that trust is built. And so the biggest mistake I see is that we get, as pediatric dentists, we get thrown to the side. We're like the last people that anybody wants to see. But the reality is it's really important that you see us, because if we have a great visit at age one, and don't worry, your child's going to scream at age one. I mean, I have a 2-year-old at home and he still screams every time I brush his teeth. Like, don't get me wrong, but they're going to scream and that's okay. But they will build that comfort and trust over time that it will be fine. By the time they walk in at three or four, they'll be like, "Hey, Dr. Beanstalk, look at me," and open their mouth and let me just look, right? Without any sort of trauma or struggle.
Yeah. And I think that's a point in terms of like why it's important to take it slow, like how you are building that trust and making sure that it feels comfortable before you're having to do anything that is intentional for an intervention per se, if it gets that bad. Mm-hmm. That's such a great example of why it's important to start early and build on that. For parents that are really nervous, what do you think is important for them to look out for in who they're looking for a pediatric dentist?
Definitely somebody who is used to seeing medically complex children or has privileges at your local children's hospital, because sometimes we have to take you to the OR and we can piggyback if there's another surgery and do a dental exam and do x-rays while your child is under general anesthesia, getting ear tubes or a G-tube or whatever it is that they're getting done at the time. It's great to collaborate and piggyback, and then your child's exposed to less anesthesia as well. So we always try to do that if we can collaborate with other departments. And I would also say a board certified pediatric dentist, because then you know that they've been through the extra tests and the extra training to be able to see your children. And also somebody who enjoys seeing that, who enjoys seeing kids and that are medically complex. I mean, some pediatric dentists just, you know, want to see, quote, healthy. I'm going to say, quote, healthy kids, but that's, you know, that's not reality. And they're doing themselves a disservice, because it's so rewarding to help families through the process.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. And to your point about anesthesia and really being able to piggyback on the OR and some of the things at the local children's hospital, I know I've heard firsthand from families just the worry about going under anesthesia and being able to knock out a few things at once it's a big day that they look forward to and almost kind of like a dread. At least they know that they're getting all of it kind of done in time.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it is scary. However, you're working with professionals and the anesthesiologists there, at least at Phoenix Children's, are phenomenal. Michelle Kim is I mean, there's so many that I've worked with that I love that are excellent and competent and beyond competent, incredible. And so as parents, yes, we worry about the risks, but the benefits do outweigh the risks if once you get all those things completed.
Yeah, definitely. What advice would you have for families in trying to manage some of this at home as well, to kind of like support what you're trying to do at the office? I know taking that to the home life is really hard. Like I have two children and it is so hard to just kind of like keep on top of it.
So, I have to say healthy choices, right? So there's a few things. There's making healthy choices, right? So some children love sweets and we want our kids to eat, right? And so we tend to give our kids a ton of sweets if they like. I've had a patient before, all he ate were sugar cookies. That's all he would eat. That's all he ate. And they were the sugar cookies that you get at the grocery store, like the thick pink icing, like on the top, right? With the sugar. And that's all he would eat. And they never brushed his teeth. And I mean, he had so many cavities. So I understand, like, as parents, we want our kids to eat, but
If they have feeding differences or disorders where they are only eating one particular food. And if that food is like that, that can be really challenging.
Exactly. So yeah. If the child is eating high sugar, high carb types of food, if they are, you know, if they're eating and that's what they're eating, then you have to make sure you're getting in there to brush. Like it's so important. It's critical, right? If your child, if you can actually pick and choose a little bit what they're eating, you know, it's dairy and yogurts and things like that are always a better choice than crackers, carbs, or any sort of sugar, right? So your choices are one thing. The other thing is the routine of brushing, right? So I would say if you get into a routine, your child will hand you the toothbrush because they know it's before bed and this is next, right? I mean, they know. I have a 2-year-old at home. I had a surprise baby at 43. So I'm turning, 46. And
oh my gosh, Lisa. So
let me tell you, I've been through this a lot. So, and he hands me the toothbrush. He's like, oh, time to brush, and he knows because it's part of the routine. We have dinner, we play a little bit, he gets in his pajamas and we brush our teeth, we read stories, we go to bed. So it's like that's, they thrive on structure. And if it becomes part of your routine, it will never, I don't want to say never. It will still be a fight, but it'll be a fight that they want to have because they're the ones telling you that they need to brush.
Yeah. And it's not so foreign of a concept.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. There's also light up toothbrushes. So if you go on Amazon, they have light up baby electric toothbrushes. So I wear, loops and a light around when I look in the mouth, right? So I can see what's in there. But at home, when I'm brushing my kids' teeth, I can't see anything. So I don't bring my loops home with my light, right? So I literally use a baby electric light up toothbrush that I buy on Amazon and the whole head lights up. And then you can see in there what you're doing. And then your child can see also if you do it in the mirror with them. I like to lay them down to brush because then you can see better. And then if your child wants to stand up and look in the mirror and brush and so they can see their teeth too, you can do that as well. But if you really want to do a great job brushing, and again, the recommendations are 2 minutes, but nobody brushes their kids' teeth for 2 minutes. I don't even brush my own kids' teeth.
2 minutes is such a long time for a 2-year-old.
Oh, it's insane. Like, are you kidding? So it's like literally like, maybe 30 seconds, just get in there. But if you lay them down and then they don't like, because if you do it at the sink, they go, I know it's a podcast, but they like tighten their lips.
Yeah.
So see what you're doing in the, like over their teeth.
Yeah. No teeth when you're like making that face.
Yeah. Right. It's a lot easier to see all the surfaces of the teeth and brush their teeth, even if it's for like 10 seconds or 15 seconds or whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's so true. And like, really, like, that's kind of those habits that you build on. And yeah, that translates to feeling comfortable when you're in your office. And then exactly. It sounds like you make your family so comfortable too. So it kind of works for the whole family as well. Yeah. To really build that trust.
Yeah. And then also whatever pediatric dentist you choose, a lot of them have Instagram accounts. Well, they have, at least my account, you can film brushing my own kids' teeth so you can see all the techniques. And you can actually like show your kids, you know, I would show your kids the picture of the pediatric dentist you're going to see. And so they know who they're going to see and they feel comfortable. And then it becomes like we become part of your family and part of your day-to-day routine and part of just part of your life, right? Until your child is graduated and off to, you know, college or parochial school or wherever they're going.
Yeah, it's such a huge piece of a family's life. Yeah. And especially like when you're considered on the feeding team and you're in collaboration with some of their other specialists or feeding therapists. Anything else that you think is important for parents to know?
Just to hang in there. I know it's hard. I know it's the hardest thing. And as a parent, all we want is our kids to be happy and healthy. And just know that we are on your side and we are here to help. And we understand what you're going through. And we are here to help in any way we possibly can. And just don't give up.
Yeah.
You know, don't give up. We will get there. There is light at the end of the tunnel. I mean, Zev is an amazing success story. I have lots of others as well. I just talk about him because Tara happens to be one of my closest friends. And it's just incredible, you know, to see the progress that you can make. And just know nothing is perfect. It's not perfect,
no,
right?
No, we're not but trying to get to, yeah. Yes.
And it's the progress that makes the difference. And even if the next visit you come in and you actually sit in the chair, that's progress, right? Or we get a toothbrush in. That's progress. Like, that's huge. Or we take a picture. Or, I mean, I've seen kids in the car. I've seen kids in the waiting room. I mean, I have kids that won't get out of their car, right? And it's okay. And I'll go out there. Like, we do what we can to make it good and happy and healthy and successful for everybody.
Oh, so true. And that's to be celebrated. Any amount of that progress, even if it is those slow steps. And that's okay, too.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for sharing about your work with families and just your work in pediatric dentistry in general. I think a lot of families do have a lot of questions about it and get nervous because they know the importance. It's just a matter of the how feels really big and burdensome sometimes for families.
Sometimes it seems overwhelming. There's so many things that you're going through and just, you know, that 30-minute visit at the dentist, you know, it makes a big difference.
It does. Well, I even know for me, I like kind of put it off a little bit with my second son. Like, I think my first son, I was like, we're in there at like 6 months. And then my second one, it was not at 6 months.
I understand. My third, I mean, poor guy. He's lucky.
Luckily, he's got you. He's good.
Lucky he's not forgotten.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about Feed the Cause because you're going to be joining us on October 11th and you are our event chair. What is really important for people to know about this fundraising event or even the work of Feeding Matters? What is interesting to you? Because I feel like everybody knows us as something different at Feeding Matters. To families, we're support, we're your partner in this. To professionals, we're something else. What do you think of when you think of Feeding Matters and what we do for the community?
Well, I mean, Feeding Matters has been a driving force in creating a shared language, right? Like PFD, that's major. That's a shared language. There's an actual diagnosis right now, right? And it's family-centered and a national advocacy movement that started here in Phoenix, which is incredible, you know, in 2006.
We're going to turn 20 right? next year. And, it's like crazy.
I know. It's like almost 20 years. I just want people to understand that we're here to help and advocate, and the money is going to research and family collaboration. And the research, a lot of it is from interviewing families, and the research is with the families because we can't help solve problems if we don't know what they are. And a lot of these families come from different socioeconomic levels, different cultures, different backgrounds, and they have so many different multidisciplinary caregivers. And there's not just one go-to or one size fits all for everybody. And that's why this event is so big so we can raise more funds to be able to solve more problems and answer more questions and help more families and help more kids. And it's just a cascading effect, you know, for people in need. And it's an amazing cause. And as a parent, as a pediatric dentist, we all know that we show our kids love. I mean, at least I do with feeding them, right? We want our kids to be fed and healthy. And it's one of the major things. And Feeding Matters helps with that and supports that and supports families, whether if it's the littlest thing or the biggest thing. I mean, that's what they're there for. And so I cannot tell you enough how much I believe in this organization. And I want this event to be a huge success. And whoever, you know, can donate, please donate so we can continue on making a difference in the world. And the whole point is to leave the world a better place than where you found it, right?
That's so true, Lisa. Thank you so much for sharing that. I mean, you're passionate about your families, but passionate about our work too. And that's just like such a beautiful thing because it is. This is our biggest fundraiser of the year. And in a time where it is really challenging to raise funds, yet we see our families needing so much more, we have a whole list of things we need to get to. And we can't get to that until we're able to make sure that we can operate and we can support families with our existing services and then all the services and initiatives that we want to do for families and the field in research and education in the future too. So it's really meaningful for the community to come together in this way and make sure that this happens. And you're such a huge champion for that. And we just really are grateful to you for being chair and being able to lead that way for such a significant event, because it does make a difference and it is leaving the world a better place. And that's every single day we try to make decisions to make sure we are there for our families, just like you do in your office too. And I'm just really grateful to you.
Well, thank you. I'm grateful to you. Thank you for all that you do. Thank you for having me on. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, this has been so fun. So as we kind of close out, you mentioned the research and you mentioned how much we want to make sure that parents and families are a part of that research. What's a barrier to getting families and the lived experience in the research, or what might be a solution? Because we know that there's a lot of research that's still needed in this field, but we're not really seeing the lived experience be part of that research.
I think, of course, you know, insurance coverage and what, as far as advocacy goes, I mean, if we could work towards insurance coverage and policy reform and increased awareness at national and state levels, I think that would be huge. A lot of people just don't even know that we exist. And, you know, money seems to be a barrier to research, to families, I mean, to the day to day. And so the more we can, you know, push on insurance to cover more, because that would be incredible. And that would make such a difference in treatment modalities, because sometimes treatment isn't performed that's needed because of the insurance and or lack thereof coverage. So I think advocacy is huge. And I think it would make a huge difference.
So true. That's so in line with a lot of our consortium members and their thinking too. Because one thing that as they were like building what they need to do for and what they want to contribute to the research, it's research and advocacy go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. And we need the advocacy efforts as well to make sure that, you know, this is a powerful movement and we are making some of the policy changes or insurance changes that we need to make. And there's still so much that needs to happen, but you also kind of need to rely on the research. And it does. It just goes hand in hand. So I think that's such a great answer. And you also said something I meant to call out earlier too, which was that you, in sharing how you need to be very individualized for our families, is another thing that we hear a lot from our families, that a lot of times they're feeling like they get this cookie cutter approach, but they're an individual family with so many unique needs. And balancing that in the research and the advocacy needs with the individualization that a family needs is a really important balance to hold in place.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, we need to integrate the voices of our families, right, into every aspect of the care and the research and the policy. And so that makes for needing funds to be able to do that. So that's why I'm telling everybody, please help, you know, and donate so we can do this and help so many more people.
Yes, yes. Well, you are such a huge champion of us and we're a champion of yours. So thank you so much for coming on. And for those of you that are out there that are in Arizona, please think about coming to Feed the Cause on October 11th. If you'd like to travel, definitely come travel to us too, or you can sponsor a family and we'll make sure we get a family those tickets, or just consider donating at feedingmatters.org. So Lisa, Dr. Beanstalk, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciated this conversation and just appreciate you in general.
Thank you for everything. And to all the families out there, hang in there. You got this. It's a rough road, but you will get there. I promise. It'll be okay.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you.
Hi, did you miss the live event for the Feeding and Eating Psychology Summit? No problem. It's on demand from September 8th through October 31st. Access every session and learn evidence-based interventions for key developmental stages for pediatric feeding disorder and ARFID. Plus, hear directly from families as they share their lived experiences. Eligible on-demand attendees can earn 6.5 hours of continuing education credit. Learn more and register today at feedingmatters.org/psych-summit. That's feedingmatters.org/psych-summit.